Hi, this is Joe Clark, composer of The Cowl Sessions, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to a GeekCast Radio Network crossover interview between the Pullbag and the flagship show GeekCast Radio. I am your host, Mike TFG1 Blanchard. And the reason why this is being featured on both GCR and the Pullbag feed is because my guest this evening is someone who composed and arranged a jazz soundtrack album for a comic book series. I am talking to Joe Clark of the Joe Clark Big Band. Hello, sir.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I am doing well. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing real well. Thank you.
Yeah, I follow Kyle Higgins on Twitter and pretty much everywhere else that I can find him. No, I'm not stalking him, ladies and gentlemen. and I've been reading his series over at Image Comics entitled Cowl, Chicago Organized Workers League, obviously based on his short film, The League. And he announced that the comic was going to get a jazz soundtrack album that at Joe Clark Chicago was going to be doing the music on this. Before we get too far into that, looking at your website, you are from Chicago.
Yes, sir.
You're still living there, which is good. growing up, like, how did you get into music in general? What were you listening to as a kid?
Well, actually, my parents met through music. They met at an open mic, of all things. And so growing up, there was a lot of music around the house. They ended up starting a wedding band. On days when they would have rehearsals, they would close the windows and pretend it was nighttime so I'd fall asleep. And then I'd usually wake up later in the evening. And I'm still kind of a night owl because of it. But around the house, there was always classic jazz playing, classical music, rock. And whenever my mom wasn't home, my dad would always play more experimental things, stuff that she might not enjoy as much. Everything from Bulgarian folk singing to fusion from the 70s, more noise-based rock, Captain Beefheart, that kind of thing. So it was kind of a smorgasbord growing up of music.
Awesome. You said Bulgarian folk singing. All I can think of is Disney Channel's Phineas and Ferb. Oh, more Bulgarian folk singing. Oh, no, less. Less Bulgarian folk singing. All right. What led you from listening to all this music as a kid and teenager and, you know, on into adulthood to want to go to school to become a composer, a creator of music?
You know, the path to writing songs actually came. My dad found a freeware program where you could write little tunes in there. And so I just played with it and kept playing with it and kept playing with it. And eventually I had a bunch of stuff that I had written. And thankfully, one of my teachers in elementary school caught on that I was doing this, and she would take the pieces I wrote and project them onto a screen during the choir concerts to sort of something to cover the transition between groups. But I never really thought it was something you could get into. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a mystery to me. I knew, you know, I'd seen Amadeus and sort of figured that you had to have it or you didn't. And so I really worked on playing trumpet. And I really doubled down on getting my trumpet chops together. And one day in high school, there's a fantastic jazz trumpeter in Chicago named Orbert Davis. And he was running a band of high school kids from the south suburbs. And so I sort of asked him, like, well, I kind of want to get into music, but I only think I can teach because I'm not good at, like, I'm not just a wunderkind at this. And he says, well, why can't you just do it? You should do it if you want to do it. And so I went for it. I went to DePaul University and studied classical composition and jazz trumpet and got a master's degree in jazz comp. And I've been playing and teaching ever since.
What is your favorite part about sitting down and coming up with a new jazz tune for your own purposes, whether it's a new album, whether it's a new collaboration with somebody? What's your favorite aspect of the creative process of coming up with a new tune?
Oh man, that's a really good question. I think the best part is when it's working. Anything that is moving forward is a good feeling. Sometimes the tunes just show up. Like, for example, Grey Raven on the new album. It was the kind of thing where Kyle said, we should come up with a theme for Grey Raven. And I sat down and played the first thing, sent it to him. He's like, that's it, we're done. But it's not always like that. And there's been a couple times that, I wrote a tune for an album that's coming out by Mark Hebert, the Barry saxophone player on the album. And it's only like a 2 minute long melody, but it took me about 2 months to finish it because it just wasn't quite right. So I guess to answer the question, the best part is when things start flowing, when you hit that state of flow and it's very natural.
Absolutely. Looking at your website here, which will be linked in the interview post on geekcastradio.com, your music has been performed by a bunch of people, including Yo-Yo Ma. What was that experience like?
That was really wild. Actually, Yo-Yo Ma has played a couple things that I've written through the Chicago Symphony Orchestra's institute that is sort of an outreach program for children. So we did a flash mob once at the Thompson Federal Center. I worked with another composer arranger named Cliff Colnott, and we did an arrangement of America the Beautiful. But then Yo-Yo Ma's played a couple other things there. It's been great. He's always such a busy guy. There's not a lot of face time. But
Right.
one of the best experiences was we do this children's program called Once Upon a Symphony. In fact, we're about to start another round, not with Yo-Yo Ma, but another show just this week. And the theme was The Ugly Duckling. And I knew that Yo-Yo Ma would be playing, and one of the pieces they wanted to do was The Swan by Camille Saint-Saëns from the Carnival of the Animals, which is this gorgeous cello solo, just absolutely beautiful. And I'm freaking out that Yo-Yo Ma is going to be playing this cello solo. And so I write it and rewrite it and polish it and re-edit it. And I finally get it, and pouring my guts into this thing. And I finally get up to the show, and there's two cellists.
Oh no.
But it's okay, because one of them's Ken Olsen of the Chicago Symphony, who's amazing. They're two amazing cellists. But as I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, they're not both good to play it. And so when it comes time for the show, Ken is the one who takes the solo part, which is cool. And Yo-Yo just improvises bird sounds over the whole thing. It's supposed to sound like a swan. I
Yeah.
couldn't even believe it. It just sounded like birds. It was really cool. So sometimes, and this is one thing I like about jazz and improvised music in general, is sometimes what the musicians bring to the table is better than what you have on the page. So
The other major person I notice in your biography on your website here is your horn arrangements can be heard on Kanye West and Malik Youssef's "Good Morning, Good Night." Talk about that experience! Like, I think this is the first person I've ever actually had an interview with that actually was that close of a connection to Kanye West. Talk about that.
Well, here's the thing too. I'm sorry to burst the bubble a bit. I know
Oh.
I've never met Kanye.
Oh,
He
seriously?
never came to the sessions or anything. I think it was, Malik wrote a lot of the songs on 808s, and so I think there may have been some exchange there. That group that was only the group that did the horn parts and the production on that. We had our own little thing for a while. It was called the 11th Hour. And we called ourselves the 11th Hour because we got a chance to record. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you hear those dings, by the way?
No.
All right, excellent. So we called ourselves the 11th Hour because a producer for one of the tracks got arrested. And we had 11 hours to replicate that track at a professional level.
Oh
That's
my
in Los
God.
Angeles. And so there was a couple of us, and we tried our hands at it. And I'm happy with how it turned out, but what I wanted to be doing in the long term. So it's been kind
Uh-huh.
of funny though, because I teach at DePaul University and Northwestern University, and every once in a while a student will bring up rap, and I can't completely hang, but I know a bit about rap. I was in the game, but I had a little bit of skin in the game, and so that sometimes surprises the students. Yeah, so I'm sorry I can't share more colorful stories or
So you weren't at
anything. No, I wasn't.
the
No, sorry, Mike. Oh, luck.
wedding. Oh boy. All right, so let's get down to what we're actually here to talk about, the cowl sessions. How did this come about?
You know what's funny? I've been asked this question more and more frequently, and it's a convoluted origin story to this. It's not nice and neat. It's not super heroic. I guess the first track that I wrote for this album was written even before there was a finalized script for the league. Because Kyle had a story treatment, and we were talking.
Let me backtrack just for a second.
Absolutely.
Were you the music guy on the league?
Yes, sir, absolutely.
Why the hell isn't that on iTunes? The music by itself.
That's a good question.
I love the music from that short.
Oh,
Come
thanks, man.
on.
We nearly recorded that the one well the original cowl, well, it was just the league theme. It got adjusted, so we adjusted, et cetera. But well, thank you, number one. And so the thing that was interesting is because I was Kyle's senior project, and he's so ambitious in terms of the scale, I wanted to start writing, just getting mood music the moment he said that the project was a go. And so I was still in school and was writing stuff so that people could record over, I think it was Thanksgiving break. So we were recording, and some musician, I actually had to write the score sometimes. I knew the drum player, the percussionist, pardon me, had to leave very soon. And I didn't have the whole score finished, so I wrote all the drum parts before I finished everything else. So some of those drum parts were written before I had any idea of the final layout of the scene, and we sort of worked around it. And so anyway, with that in mind, some of these tunes are, almost a decade old, but they've been growing and gestating, and I've had performances by different groups of the pieces because I've tried. Well, they've had a life outside of the film, which has been a pleasant surprise. And so Kyle and I worked together on some things, and Kyle's the kind of guy who, for example, he'll call me up. He called me up a few years back and said, "I want the Go-Go Power Rangers thing as my cell phone ring. Can you make that for me? Can you get that?" I'll go to the computer and work out the music. But anyway, when Cowl first came out, he said, I'm going to make a trailer, and I think it'd be cool if we had a new, track released every issue for the first five." And it was just an unfeasible timeline thing to work out at that time. But I did write music for the trailer, and that's where the original Grey Raven theme can be heard from the Grey Raven is a character in the book, podcast listeners. And from there, I thought we were done. But then in June or July, I get an email that says, "Hey, how long does it take to write and record a jazz album and get it released?" And I said, "We don't have enough time, so let's do it." And and so from there, Kyle was working his way through the first five books. And I was working my way through the album, and every once in a while we'd touch base. And Kyle's mentioned a few times that he spent so much time in the world of Cowl that it's mutated a little bit. And he and Alec have had to say, "Oh, wait a second, is that character still doing this or not?" And so that was kind of interesting, seeing that development as we're both writing our I'm writing the album and he's writing the book. So that's been really fulfilling. And so then, yeah, I booked a session in August, and it was out by October.
Yeah, it came out the week that the I think you guys really did plan this
Oh, we
because
absolutely did.
it came out like the yeah, no, it did. It came out the week that the Volume 1 Trade Collection came out.
That was by design. In fact, I think that was what Kyle said. If we can't do one for each issue, we'll have to do it when all five are first published for the first issue.
Oh man, I've listened to the nine tracks. I've reviewed it on geekcastradio.com in written form.
Yeah, thanks.
It's amazing.
Oh, I'm glad to dig
It's
it.
awesome. Just, throw it on in the background. I just cracked open the trade to read it again while listening to the album because we this week, this past Wednesday, because this will be going up on Friday. This past Wednesday, I just released my review podcast for the pull bag for Cowl Volume 1. So it's kind of, again, another big plan. We already reviewed the comic, so let's go ahead and talk to Joe and talk about the Cowl sessions. But reading it while listening to the music really adds a hell of a lot more. This could almost be a TV series.
Huh?
It really could, like, you guys could do like a YouTube series or something. You don't even have to go to the regular networks. But I mean, I know that would take up a lot of time and a lot of production and everything else,
Well,
but
I'm going to refrain from commenting.
Right, obviously it's Kyle's work. I would have loved to have had him here tonight, but that could not be helped. But it's one of those things where as I was listening to the tracks and as I was reading the book, I'm like, wow, this stuff really matches up. Like oh, forgive me. I just reviewed it and you'd think I'd remember it.
Oh, that's all right.
When they're, I think it's in issue two when Eclipse and Grant are chasing down. Yeah, it's in issue two. It's when Grant gets shot.
Yes.
When they're chasing down the guy, Sparks immediately came to mind. It's
I'll
like that's good chase music right there. And
take it.
then when John Pierce is doing his investigation, obviously. Track three investigations, comes into play. And I thought that was really well done. I really do hope you guys do another one, after the next arc, however long the next arc is going to be.
Well, thanks. I think we kept joking about when we were coming up with the title. I kept saying, "Well, let's just call it Cowl Sessions Volume 1 of 20," and or Volume 1, and so yeah. I man, if Kyle's up for it, I think I'd be up for it. And if Sparks and Shadows, our label, is interested in it, I think. I can definitely speak for myself and say I would love to keep doing this. I like the
Absolutely.
idea of releasing in my own music. There's something when I put out my first album, Lush, it's for a big band, and we did traditional media in terms of releasing CDs, and we worked with a lot of really talented, awesome old jazz media guys, and that was a great experience. But at the same time, I would be talking to Kyle, and he's putting out a new book every month, and it's just a different kind of culture. You talk
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
when you put out the first album, for example. I know you and I were talking previously, and I had to stop and think about when what year it actually came out because we spend so much time with the pre-release and all
Right.
the planning, and you have to mail out the physical copies. So it's a different kind of pace of things. So man, there was something really fun about working on the comic book turnaround schedule. There's an
Yeah.
energy to it and an urgency, which is it reminds me of working in live theater sometimes, where you just have to make a decision, you have to go.
Absolutely, because I mean, it depends on the series, it depends on the publisher, but sometimes you go month to month work. I've heard interviews with writers and artists on comics that sometimes they go month to month writing story arcs. Sometimes they go sit and write and do all the work for, two or three or four issues that are coming once a month down the line. So it just really depends, but
Oh yeah, totally.
I mean, honestly, like, after I would kill, not literally, but I would kill for a soundtrack after each arc of, like, seriously, Cowl is probably one of my favorite non-superhero, non-friend, because technically it's okay. It when
Semi
I
non-superhero.
when I say non-superhero, I mean it's not DC's, it's not Marvel's, it's not, you know what I mean? It's
Sure, it's not the.
when I think of a superhero comic, I think of Batman, Superman, you know, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern.
There are superheroes in it, but it's not that kind of narrative for sure.
Right, exactly. I mean, this to me is a period piece comic that is about a superhero labor union in 60s Chicago, and that's unlike anything any publisher is doing right now.
Absolutely.
And so when I say, you know, it's not a superhero comic, I mean, it's not with DC or Marvel. It's not a franchise comic like, you know, He-Man Masters Universe licenses out to DC,
Oh,
or,
absolutely.
you know,
Yeah.
Transformers licenses out to IDW. It's a creator-owned comic, and man, like, I know this would kill Kyle, but I wish Cowl was a weekly series. I really do.
Oh,
I
yeah.
know that
Yeah,
would kill him, but it
Pete.
is just that damn good. And you know, having music to go along with it. What's going to be interesting for me is, as issues 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever, come out, to see if the soundtrack can fit some of the upcoming scenes that Kyle is going to write, and Rod Reiss is going to, you know, Kyle, Alec, and Rod are going to work on and write and illustrate and all that stuff, to see if it also fits with what's coming after.
And Alex Siegel, don't forget Alec. Alec
Yeah, I
Siegel.
did.
Oh,
Yeah,
and you said, oh, I'm sorry.
I said Kyle, Alec, and Rod.
Forgive me. You can
Yes.
edit that out.
But because it really is going to be interesting, because I know you, as you already said, he specifically asked you to write this based around the first arc, which is Principles of Power. And it's going to be interesting if, heaven forbid, you don't get to do another one, if this music can fit in any other arc after this one.
Yeah, that's almost a, I don't want to say a Rorschach test, but see how our minds process the two. That's actually been part of the joy of it is it's not a temporal one-to-one kind of thing where there's a matching up to per scene. I know I had a couple people asking me like, is there going to be a sign when I should start playing it? But one of the inspirations to me was this 1957 Mancini album, the music of Peter Gunn. And most people know the theme, the dung 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 dung, that part. But the whole album after that, after the main theme, is a bunch of stuff that just sort of sets the mood. Stuff that wasn't always performed in its entirety on the series. And in some cases, and this is what really intrigued me, was never played on the series at all and wasn't even written for that. It was just, it was just Mancini's idea of like the mood of the scene and the mood of the story. And to me, I like thinking musically in general, but that just suggested such a big world. There's soundtracks for scenes and stories that aren't even there yet, And so I don't know. It's gonna be interesting. The other thing that's gonna be interesting is book six is being done in the style of an old Silver Age book and is gonna be a standalone. So makes me want to pull out some of the soundtrack from the original League, some of the trombone stuff we did with the real nasally newsreel quality.
Oh my God. You have to find a way to get that on. There's gotta be a way you guys can submit that to iTunes. Just put it to, it already exists, correct?
I think I'd have to go digging through the archives, or maybe Kyle is such an organized guy, he probably is two clicks away from finding it, but
I mean, seriously, like, I would buy that in a heartbeat. I was actually sitting here at my computer waiting, you know, on the 27th, going into the, I was sitting here at 11:45, just waiting for midnight to click over here in the Eastern time zone, just waiting so I could just hit that buy button.
Oh, thanks, man.
It
You know how to
just
make a guy feel good.
it, That sounds so wrong.
Come on.
I know what you mean. But yeah. But no, I mean, it's, you know, people need to take more notice of this series and of this album. I mean, I know I've seen, I think I've seen several other people review it online. I don't remember where exactly, but, you know, just do a search for the Cowell sessions, and I'm sure, you know, reviews will pop up.
There's more that are coming too. That's one of the nice things about doing a digital only release.
Mm-hmm.
We can roll it out a little bit. It feels real nice.
Absolutely. Will the, I know the artwork for this one is very Blaze heavy, since he is on the cover.
That is true.
and I do think that opening track, the opening track, which is entitled Blaze, I do think that fits the very first battle scene in issue one of the series. So, I mean, it does work where you can put this on and listen to it track one to track nine, and at least through the first two or three issues, you'll be set for music.
Then you put it on loop and you'll be set for the last two.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like Dark Side of the Rainbow. You ever done that one?
Yeah.
Just leave it on loop.
So what came first, the instrumental version of Chicago or the sung version with Rhea Yarbrough?
You know, when we first talked about doing an arrangement of Chicago, which honestly, I've wanted to work with it. I just found out it was in the public domain. So that was really nice to find that out. Kyle and I both were like, oh, this would make a really cool vocal thing. And we'd love to have Rhea on it, but we weren't sure if it was going to work out schedule-wise. You know, she's in high demand. And so the challenge was to write an arrangement that worked both as an instrumental and as a vocal. And we didn't know until about a week before the recording session. Even passing out the music to musicians, I had these parts, all these notes written in there that, you know, if there's a vocalist, you'll have to lay out here because she'll be singing a part. And it was only a couple days before the session I was able to contact everybody and be like, we have a vocalist! But by that point, I've gotten so familiar to listening to the instrumental and had that in my head that we decided to leave them both in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm happy with how it turned out, though.
I hate to say it, but I think her vocal version is the superior version.
Oh no! Don't are you kidding me? You know, she's awesome. Number one, and number two, we're lucky to have her. You know.
Yeah.
And
I mean, when I get down to Chicago, the instrumental version, I'm like, wait, is something missing here?
Well, the other thing too, talking about reading it with the book, I think that was something that I've found. You know, reading and listening to it, it's kind of nice to have it return is a little bit more subdued at the end, because you know, by the end of the book, without giving too much away, you know, the mood has changed, but it's changed in a way that the status quo is somewhat maintained. So musically, we're trying to, you know, evoke that as a kind of musical metaphor. So hopefully that works out in that sense.
Absolutely. What other things are you working on now that Cowell Sessions Volume 1 is out?
Oh, man, it's been a real busy but fun couple weeks since that album came out, because it's only been a couple weeks. Wow.
Yeah.
I just finished a project with two fantastic trumpeters, Marquise Hill, who just a few days ago won the Thelonious Monk Jazz Trumpet Competition in Los Angeles. Just a crazily nice guy who's a monstrous player. Real warm, soft, energetic, intelligent sound. And he was doing a project with one of his mentors, a trumpeter named John Faddis, who used to perform with Dizzy Gillespie. You know, this beast. So we just did a big show together, and I'm finishing up a series of arrangements for the Chicago Symphony Orchestra's children's series. We're getting that started this week, but I'll be finished hopefully soon. And the Chicago Sinfonietta, another orchestra in the area. And yeah, I've got some of my own projects I'm working on, something also Chicago themed. So I think there's a little bit more to pull from there, but that should be coming together soon. Yeah.
Very awesome. Very awesome. All right. I think that's gonna do it, really.
Absolutely.
Cowl Sessions, it's amazing, people. Go listen to it. Go get the first trade of the series. You're gonna love it. Where can the people interact with you online, sir?
I am at Twitter at Joe Clark Chicago, and you can follow me on Facebook, also Joe Clark Chicago, and joeclarkbigband.com.
Awesome, awesome. Well, that's gonna do it for us here on Geekcast Radio and Inside the Pull Bag. Coming up next week, we're gonna be talking about another Image series. It would be interesting to see if jazz music could fit to this series. I don't think it will, but next week, ladies and gentlemen, you're gonna have to listen to this episode of the podcast in a closet away from everybody because we are talking about Image Comics series by Matt Fraction, entitled Sex Criminals. So we'll be talking about that next week. Huge thanks to Joe Clark. It's been amazing, dude, talking to you.
Oh, thanks, Mike. This was great. I appreciate it.
All right, we will catch you next time.
Just couldn't shut down. Ooh, on State Street, that great street. I just want to say. Chicago.